This is the Brian Callen Show. Okay, everybody, this is the Brian Callen Show, Brian Callen Podcast. They're synonymous. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, what's what? Brian Callen, the show or the podcast? Anyway, I am in New York City, and I am doing a series called The Most Interesting New Yorkers, one of whom happens to be my best friend, Jimmy Burke, who's sitting next to me. This is the Jimmy Burke Hour. Jimmy Burke, welcome to the Brian Callen Podcast.
Thank you, my bubba. Thank you, BB. I call him BB.
Okay, well, that's a really homoerotic nickname.
BB.
And I appreciate that. Jim, you are often referred to as either the Prince of New York or a national treasure by those that know you.
That's true.
You are as close to a real-life Peter Pan as it gets, which is why Jerry McFadden, who's our good friend, calls you Pietro Panto. Calls you Pietro Panto. Because you are 50, you ride your bike everywhere, you do not have a cell phone, you... I don't even think you have credit cards, do you?
No, I don't have a credit card.
You don't have credit cards or a cell phone.
Correct. Or insurance.
Or insurance.
Health insurance or life insurance.
Or no, life no insurance or health. Of any kind. You don't have children. You don't have a wife.
Mm-hmm.
You have an apartment, a five-story walk-up, which is a good thing. You're in better shape than probably any 50-year-old on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And... But now that you have a bad hip, you can't play semi-pro
basketball.
Softball or basketball.
Yeah.
So, welcome, and how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing good being with you, being with my bubba.
Thank you.
My girlfriend just broke up with me this weekend.
She did?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Why did she break up with you?
This is the fifth time she's broken up with me. that's true. she broke up with me because I suggested that we go to a barbecue before we go out to Fire Island together because she performs at the in Cherry Grove, which is all gay. She's a drag queen. And
she's a woman who's a drag queen.
Correct. It's like it's like that movie
Victoria.
Victor Victoria.
Okay.
Yeah. She's a incredibly muscular, and so when you see her in a bathing suit, you know,
how big's her cock?
Gay guys, her it's not long, it's fat.
Good.
Wait a
minute,
she doesn't have a cock.
Oh, sorry, she's a girl.
Jesus.
Yeah, well, I sense that there's probably more to the story.
There's
had five breakups, though.
We've had five breakups, all by her, always by email. She sent me an email yesterday, and in it, basically, the crux of the message was, I'm cold, unloving, a lousy lover, and a drunk.
Is that what she said about you?
Yes.
You're cold, unloving. You're not either one of those.
A lousy lover.
Not to be too graphic. You and I have taken down some chicks together.
Yeah.
And you do pretty well.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
And you know what you're doing.
It's not my first rodeo.
And what is the
The fourth one was drunk.
You're not a drunk. You can't handle your booze, but you don't drink a lot.
Exactly.
So it sounds to me like she's projecting there. So.
I think so too. I think those are all. It's just
is
ammo.
That what you got? She said you're cold,
Bubba. I swear to God,
unloving,
cold, unloving, a lousy lover, and a drunk. And I emailed her back and I said it took you 4.5 years to figure all that out. I could have told you that on the first date. But I also said that I wasn't a drunk. So
you should have just said, hey, just said,
hey,
I'm not a drunk.
That's what I said. Well, she said, you, at the end of it, she said, and by the way, you're drunk numerous nights of the week. Like, just threw that in.
Let me ask you something. You've been around. I've been around. What is your philosophy on relationships? Why don't men and women get along as well? And what is the thing? What do you think is the biggest culprit to breakups?
Well, I was just discussing that with my partner, Jeff Cohen, who's a great guy, who just went through a divorce himself. And he was the greatest husband I've ever seen. Home every single night. Doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. Home every night.
We gave his name, so don't be too personal.
Gotcha. A great guy.
Yeah.
Really a great guy.
It's a mystery. I mean, you can do everything right and your wife leaves you. You can do everything wrong, your wife stays with you.
I don't know what it is.
A lot of it seems to be like we are working our own dysfunction out in a relationship. Somebody said one time, this relationship guru, I don't remember his name, and he said he was the father of a girl I knew. And I said, well, what do you deal with? He goes, relationships mostly. And I said, oh, yeah, well, what do you think of that? I think I was dating somebody, a mutual, somebody we know, girl, who was one of my favorite
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
But
yeah.
She was little. She had some substance abuse problems and things. And
yep.
And he said, "Well, if passion, the root of passion is suffering. Remember that. The root of the word, I think, in Latin is suffering."
Yeah.
So he said, and by the way, every relationship you have is with yourself. Just so you know. Well, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that. It's with myself. You know. In other words, so much of what you're working out through another person is your own shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always said she was basically your addiction in a 5-foot package.
Boy, was she ever
walking around.
But you know, I think that relationships for me now have become, you know, I think that the idea is you can be with a woman and you can be married with two kids or whatever. And some days that's the wrong fucking woman, man. Other days she's the best woman in the world. So 1 hour she sucks. The next hour she's great.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all a verb. Yeah. And if you're going to try to, you know, if you're going to try to work for some static ideal,
yeah,
you know, if you're working for a noun,
yeah,
and our mythology is so wrapped up with, and they lived happily ever after,
mm-hmm.
you grow up with that as being what you're supposed to aim for. Guess what, girls and boys?
Absolutely agree with
that's
you.
That's when the work fucking starts.
Exactly.
Happily ever after.
Exactly.
The movie was the honeymoon period, and now the work starts.
Rough
or
patches.
Happily
that's
ever
why
after.
Called
I'll
rough
talk
patches.
To you guys in about 4 or 5 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And now the work starts.
Yep.
So
I'm right with you on that. And you have to be willing to do the work.
You got to be willing to do the work, whatever the work means. The problem is there's no manual for a relationship.
Yeah.
But I will say that I from my experience with relationship therapy, which I've been through, what's interesting is that women and men think very differently. So women will a lot of times arrive at a conclusion.
Correct. An assumption.
Verbally.
Mm-hmm.
They have to talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
Men think their conclusion out. They come to it and then they voice it. That's why they don't talk as much.
Mm-hmm.
And women, you know, women also, their overriding need is to connect, they say. And men's overriding need is to be significant, is to leave a mark, whatever that is. So you're both coming at it in very different, with very
Definitely.
Different priorities.
Well, our brains work differently.
Our brains work differently.
That's
hunter,
yeah.
Gatherer.
Yeah.
We're hunters, they're gatherers. Yeah. I mean, I'm drawing broad stroke conclusions, but you can make those assumptions. And then the question becomes, well, I guess relationships ultimately are one big compromise, which isn't necessarily a bad thing
no.
because we still do have nostalgia to connect. We still need to connect, right? So
absolutely. We are the most social animal in the world. And because of that, and that was evolutionary, because of that, we've risen to the top of the food chain, being the most, I mean, even more so than ants, worker ants, army ants.
Mm-hmm.
We are the most social being in the world.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with also our brains and the fact that, you know, there's a brain called there's a neuron in the brain called the econoneuron. And those are basically the neurons that they've identified that help you understand and have feelings, basically. Feelings.
Hmm.
So if you have a lot of econoneurons, you're very, you know, you're very
sensitive.
Sensitive.
Do women have more econoneurons than men?
The article I read didn't say that,
yeah.
but it did say that.
I do think men can feel just as deeply, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the greatest artists in the world and, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
and writers
yeah.
and
men. Yeah.
Men feel just as deeply. The thing is that they found that with these econoneurons that having more of them could lead to suicide. So isn't that kind of an oxymoron? You want to be more sensitive and you want to be
yeah.
a good person.
Yeah, but feeling too much can be too overwhelming.
Yeah. And whales, gorillas, human beings have these, and they're also very, they're very tribal and they're very
well. You know, dolphins,
animals.
Dolphins, and I don't know about whales, but dolphins, and I believe killer whales can recognize themselves in mirrors. So can
that's a big mirror.
So can chimpanzees.
That's a big fucking mirror.
That's no compact.
That ain't no compact, dude.
That ain't no compact.
Isn't that funny how they can recognize themselves
yeah.
in a mirror?
I knew apes
so
could.
They have cognizance. Yeah.
You
well,
know,
they
you
just
look a little
out.
Bit like an ape.
Thank you, dude.
You
well, you know what it is? You're looking at my shoulders, my long, powerful arms.
Well, it's your forearms.
Yeah, I got some big forearms,
Jesus.
Dude. Just from years.
Why is your grip so weak with
years,
those forearms?
Years of riding the mat. Well, I don't need a strong grip with you, dude. I just tie you up with my legs. I'll do whatever I want to on a mat. You know
really?
That. Yeah, in
really?
A fight, what happens? What do you
really?
Do?
Really? Oh, because of all your
It's jiu-jitsu. No, I'll just punch your lights out. I'll punch and kick your lights out.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah?
You punch better than me. You kick better than
yeah.
me. Your jiu-jitsu is better than me.
Yeah.
We've wrestled. We've done all those things.
Yeah.
And I give you high marks on all of them.
Yeah, thank you.
You
hear that, America?
But guess what?
What?
Guess what?
What?
When you talk to my dad, and you have my dad on this podcast, he's going to tell you about a little guy who I've told you about before.
Artie Burke.
No, not his brother. He's going to talk about a little guy.
Oh, yeah, you told me about a guy. You knew this guy. I want to just say something. Jimmy's father owned bars. And
so did I.
And so did Jimmy. In New York and in Brooklyn. And so Jimmy grew up a lot of times hanging out in those bars.
Since I was a kid, I grew up
Since you were
in
a
bars.
Kid, so you were around either cops or criminals or the neighborhood slack.
Bookies, detectives, cops.
And you told characters. Me about one time there was a...
All Damon Runyon
There was
types.
A hitman or a guy that you had met or that your dad knew who...
Well, there was many of them. I'll let him tell these stories because he's the best. But this one guy, and I always think of him when I know that someone is probably far superior than I am.
In the violent circles.
In the violent circles, right, yeah. Exactly. And I always think of this guy because I'm an athlete, but I'm...
You're not a pushover.
No, I mean, I'm an athlete. You know, yeah. I'm going to, you know, if fighting is not your thing and you're just a normal Joe like me, you know, I'll keep you busy.
Yeah.
But if you know what you're doing, you'll kill me. However, and this guy, his name escapes me right now. He was a little Italian guy. He was about 5'2".
Don't say names on the podcast.
No. He was a bookie at this bar. And he would, in the old days, the bookies would take book right in the bar. And he had his pencil and he'd write down whatever bets he wanted. And I remember I was in the bar with my dad, and I was talking about the guy. I said, look at that guy. He said, what a character he is. And my dad said, he's one of the roughest guys in this place. I went, what? He was completely unassuming.
Yeah.
He said...
They always are.
And he said, I've seen him get into confrontations or get into arguments, and he takes that number two pencil, and he'll drive it. Not stick it. He'll drive it into your eye.
Jesus Christ.
Not the eraser end, but the pointy lead pencil.
Isn't that funny how you can be walking around with a number? You can look like a nerd.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you got to wear an eye patch.
For the rest of your life because he has pierced your pupil with a number two pencil.
I got in a fight with a small 5'2". Walk! I don't know why I'm from Ireland, but I'm an Irish pirate.
Pirates
you would
like
be
that.
My fucking parrot. If I was a pirate, dude, I would dress you up like a parrot.
Blackbeard.
And you'd be hanging around. You're too big to sit on my shoulder, but you'd have to hang over my shoulder all the time.
I would love
it.
I basically do
I am looking
now.
For me gold. Aye. And you'd be going, ah! And I'd feed you fucking crackers, and you'd have no energy because you'd have to eat crackers all day. Yeah, well, that's the thing about growing up in bars. You know, you see a lot of
characters. Oh my God!
You tell me a great story about Johnny Spanish. I think his name was.
Spanish Eddie. He had just gotten out of prison. I thought he was a very nice guy. I was home from college. I was 19, and he was in the bar. And you know, I'm 6 feet tall, kind of wiry, athletic. And he just was he was built like a man. He had a thick neck and thick arms and thick hands, and kind of a handsome, rugged, handsome guy. And you know, and I was full of piss and vinegar at 19, and in great shape. I could play ball all day. I could do push-ups and pull-ups forever. And I remember Spanish Eddie could kind of saw me. He said, so how many push-ups you think you can do? I said, I don't know, in a row, 50, 60 in a row probably. So he said, really? He goes, how many can you do with me on your back? I went,
how many can you
what?
Do with me on your back?
Why would you be on my back? He goes, well, I tell you what, I'm going to get on the floor.
Because that's how I used to do it.
He said, I tell you what, I'm going to get on the floor right now, and you're going to get on my back, and I'm going to do push-ups with you on my back. And I said, get the fuck out of here. And he dropped down. And by the way, he was in a suit. Because, you know, those guys all know how to dress, too. You know, he's not
those
coming
rough,
in looking
rough
like a
monk. Guys now. They dress like gentlemen.
Yeah. And he took his jacket off and he got down on the floor and I sat on his back and he proceeded to crank out 20 like they were nothing, slow and controlled. And I laughed. I couldn't believe it. And I was like, this guy just did 20 push-ups with me on his back. Now, anybody out there, any knuckleheads out there think they can do one push-up with your friend on your back? Go ahead and try it.
And send me the and tweet me the fucking video.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, for you, we're gonna continue with these New York stories, and I love them. I keep forgetting to tout my gigs. I'll be at Seattle at the Parlor Live July 12th to the 14th, and then I'll be in Dallas July 26th through the 28th. I'll be in Addison, the Addison Improv. All right, mark that down. Come down. I'd love to see you. Okay, keep going.
The Addison Improv.
That was a stand up comedy break.
Yeah, the Addison is great. You'll be great there. You should go check Brian out. He's awesome live. If you haven't seen him, Go see him, man. I was there. By the way, I think I'm about the only person that can say this, but I was at his very first stand-up.
Damn right you were. And that was almost, how many years ago? That was 17 or 18,
18
years ago.
I think 18 years ago.
You came and saw my first stand-up. I was so afraid. Thank God that you
your
came.
Your teeth
to
were chattering.
Dude, I blanked. I was, remember that?
I remember.
I remember you came, though, and you supported me. And I think you came to my second ever.
Oh, I did. I went to many in a row after that.
Wow. And
yeah.
That was amazing to see, to have you come and hang out like that. That was pretty awesome.
And I appreciate the shout out that you gave me on your comedy show for being there.
Oh, hey man, come on!
Yeah, no, I appreciate
I don't like that.
That
1 hour special. So
no, this
yeah. For
this,
the record, I don't like my special, but my next special is going to be awesome.
It's very fun.
I'm looking right now at the New York Times Channing Tatum.
Yeah,
I hung out with him in Vegas.
He's a handsome guy.
Before he was a star,
he's built.
He's a great kid. Yeah, he's built like a. He's kind of like a white, shorter version of Michael Jordan. Like he's about 6'1".
Really?
That athletic kind of look.
Jesus.
He was a football player. He's a real athletic.
I believe it.
A
he looks
great dancer and a great guy.
He used to dance. For
oh yeah,
real.
And
when
we were in Vegas
and
he was
clubs.
And he had a girlfriend, so he wasn't every single girl would look at him and want to bang him, but he had a girlfriend.
Right.
And he wasn't going to do anything.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's a really good guy, but I remember I didn't know he'd be this big a star, you know. We hung out and I was telling him about to come to acting class and you know, I mean, yeah. I was just trying to help him out. He's a young guy, and now he's Channing Tatum. I think he's like the biggest young movie star in the world.
He's huge.
Yeah,
and he's good.
And he's great. He's great.
He has smoky eyes.
He's great, and his eyes are beautiful.
Smoky.
He's about 6'1", almost 6'2", about 190.
Yeah. He's
athletic as shit.
He's cute and handsome at the same time.
Well, he's got a sense of humor. Like, he doesn't take himself that seriously.
Really? Let me ask you something. Yeah. I know how good a fighter you are.
I'm not a good fighter.
Well, I know how well trained you are.
Well, I mean, I'm not even that.
Do you think you could take Channing Tatum?
Well, only out of jealousy would I take him.
Magic Mike?
Well, but no, because he's too young and handsome. So if he was banging my girl, I'd probably ask for a videotape. What am I going
to
do?
But you could make a lot of money off that tape.
Yeah, you'd make a lot of money. I'd be like, look, I forgive you. Just give me the videotape.
And,
so
your girl is awesome looking, too, by
She's
the way.
Beautiful.
So that's a one of a.
How am I going to blame her? How am I going to blame her?
I wonder if she thinks about Channing when she's banging you.
Probably. I'm sure they all think about Channing when they're banging me. I mean, my wife.
What?
Not all. I mean, look, I'm not going to, you know, if your wife or your girlfriend is banging Channing Tatum.
No problem. I have no problem.
You can't be mad at that. You just got to be like, oh, God damn it.
Can I tell you a great story?
Seriously, I mean.
Can I tell you a great story? Opening, I owned a bar on the Upper West Side. It was a martini bar called Vermouth. You were there many, many times.
Yep.
And I was dating a very, very hot girl named.
I had sex in Vermouth in the ice spa in your like ice locker.
Yeah, yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you came down.
I snuck down and watched a little bit.
You fucking sick pervert. That's right. I remember I'm having sex with this girl on the counter.
To watch.
And I see you fucking come around the corner thinking there's another girl there, and I was like, oh Jesus Christ, get the fuck out of here, dude.
I was just peeking.
Wait, and do you remember this? I'm glad I'm doing this on the podcast. Do you remember that I was with this girl I was kind of casually dating, and there was a divider? Do you remember? And I was standing at the fucking
bar.
Totally crowded. And
you looked over the divider at me. I was sitting at the table. Yeah. There was a divider that divided the tables from the bar area.
Yeah.
It was about 4 or 5 feet high. And Brian looks over at me, and I'm at the table with some people, and he's making a kind of a funny face. And I'm like, hey, what's up, Bubba? I'm like, what's up? And you're mouthing something. And you start pointing down, and I'm like, what?
It's a crowded bar. Like
crowded
standing room
bar.
For real. And I'm at the bar.
Yep. And I get up, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you pointing at? And I go to the divider, and I look over the divider. There's a girl at the bar, bent over.
I didn't even know her. She was friend with my friend.
She was blowing me
at
the bar.
Because what happened?
Crowded bar.
What happened was.
It's like, it looked like she bent over to tie her shoelace, and then while she was down there.
My friend, because my friend was there with her friend, this girl that I had met in college once.
Right.
And she had kind of a crazy eye. She was just a little crazy.
Yes.
And so
yes.
My friend, I won't say her name, but my friend, she goes, Brian, I got blown off tonight. I got blown off. Isn't that fucked up? I wanted to have sex with this guy, and he blew me off. And her friend said, well, why don't you fuck Brian? And she goes, no, we're friends. She goes, well, at least suck his dick. And my friend goes, what am I going to do, suck his dick here? And she goes, yeah, do it here. I'll do it if you don't do it.
Jesus, was that the conversation?
I swear to God. And I went, well, you saw it.
I didn't know what the...
I was like, this was how many
years
ago?
I didn't know what the preamble
was. This was like, how many years ago was this? Like 13?
Oh, no, I can tell you exactly when. It was 1997.
Oh, dude, that's a long time ago. 1997.
15 years ago.
15 years ago. Yeah. And I literally was like, I said, what? And she goes, I'll do it. I'll do it. And she just got on her knees, pulled my zipper down, and started sucking my piece. And I looked at the girl I was friends with, and I go, I'm going to lose it here.
Yeah.
I'm going to come. And when I said that, and I started to go, I'm not trying to be too graphic, my friend started making out with me. She started making out with me. So as I'm, you know, losing it in this girl's mouth, my friend starts, well, I'm glad you're here to actually corroborate the story because
it truly did happen.
I had forgotten about this as we're talking about it. You know, this is bad that I put this on my fucking podcast, but, you know, I'm honest.
15 years ago, you know what?
But how about that shit? And then I...
And I own the place.
Right.
I should have, like, broken it up and thrown you out, but
right.
I was...
And then I ended up taking that girl that I made out with at the bar, that was the girl I took down to...
Downstairs.
She goes, yeah. So I was like, I got to have sex with you because you're bummed out about this guy that blew you off. So I got blown, and then I took that girl downstairs and had sex with her. Well, I was a fucking animal. Oh, yeah. By the way, I was there with a girl. But we had kind of a casual relationship.
Yeah.
But I went home with that girl.
But I was
I went home with the girl I went.
I was
left
impressed
with.
You
got to leave with the girl you come with.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, yeah.
I'm a real fucking gentleman. I expose myself. And please don't judge me. I swear to God.
No judgments
I'm a grown man now, and I was just a scumbag. And
let America judge you. And I was also impressed with
your
refractory time there, that you were able to bounce back
come
so
on, dude.
Quickly.
I got.
Well, you were so young.
I said, I said one time, a long time ago to Joe Rogan, I go, I got a lot of fucking testosterone. I can have sex all day. And he goes, you don't have testosterone. You're just a fucking pervert.
Oh, God.
Man, oh, man. We've had some times, you and I. We've had some good times.
I can't even get into it. Well,
we, Jimmy and I used to pick up girls like by pretending we were doctors, remember? Yeah.
Doctors,
stuntmen, Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
You know, we'd just like throw something out and you'd have to follow the lead. I'd be like, well, Jim and I are, Jimmy's my captain. He's in the worst SEAL team, guys. And the girls are like, really?
Yeah.
We'd always get these like chubby Catholic girls and end up, you know, banging them somewhere in an alleyway.
One of my favorite moments with Brian was when we were in Italy together, and he was in a car.
Make sure, was I dating anybody? I don't think I was.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
We were in Italy together, and I was in the car in front of you, and you in the car behind me. He was in a car full of girls. I was in a car mostly Italians and a couple of American girls. Anyway, we got into a very bad car accident. We hit a tree. The guy driving the car was a fucking moron. And we went to the hospital. I dislocated my shoulder. People, you know, broke their legs. You know, everybody got fucked up. But Brian...
And I met that cute girl.
Oh, my God. She looked like Natalie Wood.
Dude,
with huge tits.
She looked like Natalie Wood with huge tits.
God, she was gorgeous.
Natalie, whatever her name is.
Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood, yeah. But she had, Natalie Wood's an all-time actress for any of you young
people. Yeah, dude, Natalie Wood's, look
tits,
at the splendor in the grass.
Huge tits, and she was so
Natalie
fucking
Woods
pretty.
Is so beautiful.
And I had a goatee. Remember, I had a Three Musketeers shit going on.
Exactly.
He
thought he was
so
Porthos.
Italian.
I kept calling him Porthos.
Right. I had expensive clothes. I'd bought all these expensive clothes. Yep. I was walking around like an Italian.
Oh, God.
What a yo-yo I
what
was.
What a fucking yo-yo. And it's, you know, with his shirt open down, it was, you know, it was pants and his hairy chest, which he now shaves, by the way.
I don't have a hairy chest.
He shaves
it now. I
don't
fucking shave it, dude.
You
look.
Do too shave
look at my
it.
Chest. Look at that shit.
Dude, you got an 8-pack.
Yeah, I'm
is
a fucking athletic
pack?
Motherfucker, dude. So don't ever.
You should shave the hair off
and
show. If I had an 8-pack like that, I'd
fucking... I want to shave my torso with a straight razor.
So we're in Italy and the car crashes and I come down after getting my arms put in a sling, my shoulders, I'm in massive pain. I have to go get painkillers. And I'm looking for Brian and I walk outside and he's got a girl that's this gorgeous, gorgeous girl up against the wall and he's got her tits out and... And I'm in real pain. I need my Bubba. I'm
again,
in another country.
This is a long time ago.
This is a long time ago. This
yeah,
is
like
the,
I like I don't,
the
I
90s.
Like
yeah.
like that's a sin that I had her huge perfect Italian tits. She didn't speak a word of English either.
Yeah, not a word. God, she was gorgeous. And I said, Brian, dude,
I'm nuzzling her breast.
Yeah,
with
I'm
my
like, dude,
face.
We gotta go. We gotta go back to
you're all fucked up.
All fucked up. We gotta go back to the apartment. And I remember you pissed off because that girl then had to leave. But there was another girl there.
Yeah, we ended up staying with that other girl.
We stayed with that other girl. And she was very, very nice and very cute, too. And she said, please, please be my guest. You sleep on my couch. So she pulls out, we get there, she pulls out the couch. It's 4 or 5 in the morning. I'm exhausted. Yeah. The sun is coming up. I'm in pain. I'm in pain.
You got to understand, guys, he hit a tree at 65 miles an hour at a BMW.
Yeah.
I mean, the girl got knocked out.
People broke ribs and noses and whiplash.
Broke his leg. It was really bad.
Yeah, it was bad. So she goes into the bedroom to just get some sheets and pillows for us to sleep on the couch. And Brian goes in to help her. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting. I'm like, what the fuck? I walk in, and he's grabbed her, and he's trying to go at it with her, too. And I finally said, hey, motherfucker, I have a fucking broken shoulder here. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I have no painkillers. Let her make the fucking bed. You got to look after me for 5 minutes.
And I didn't.
Just look after me.
I'm such an asshole, man.
Oh, my God.
I'm a selfish prick.
Oh, you're so selfish. That's one of the only times I've ever yelled at you.
Yeah,
in my whole life. I was mad at you. You weren't taking care of me.
I know, the girl was making out with me. I was like, I get laid.
Yeah, exactly.
These Italian girls are great. I'm loving Naples. We were in Rome.
Exactly.
I was like, this is good to be an American in Rome. Holy shit. I'm
and I couldn't pull the couch out because of my shoulder, and I'm waiting.
Did I have sex with that girl? I don't even remember.
I have no idea. I remember I went to sleep, and I was snoring in my sleep. I was having a problem. I was all fucked up.
Dude, you were. I remember because you were going.
Yeah, I was in so much pain. My shoulder was out of my socket.
I woke up like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? You were all bunched up. You were like, yeah. You'd make these weird noises. It was crazy. It was amazing. We've had adventures that we could go into, but we didn't really finish. So your girlfriend broke up with you.
Yeah, yesterday.
And we talked a little bit about relationships. You are born and raised in New York City.
Correct. Born in Brooklyn. Born in Brooklyn, went to high school in Staten Island.
You've seen New York change a great deal.
A great deal. I've lived in 3 different boroughs, Brooklyn, Staten Island. Now I've lived in Manhattan for the last I guess 30 years, yeah, basically. New York's changed incredibly.
For the better?
Way better. Yeah. Way cleaner. Less crime by far. The tourists here, I'll tell you, there are a lot more Asians.
It's always a good thing. Anytime you have more Asians, like in any country, it usually means things are cleaner and more orderly and more profitable, more prosperous.
This whole thing about immigrants. Immigration
saves this country.
That's
what I always say about Mexican people that I know in California.
The other hardest workers I've ever seen?
I've never met anybody work harder in my fucking
life. Oh, that's
a
bad thing? People coming in and working hard in your country?
They're amazing.
Well, Fareed Zakaria said yesterday on GPS, his show. Yeah. It's a great show. I highly recommend his show.
I just read his book.
He's a smart dude.
Yeah, The Future of Freedom.
And he said one of the things that we have over Japan, over Europe, is that our population is growing and our immigrant population is over 1 million people a year, more than all countries put together. And immigrants are good for the country because...
Well, we have to figure out...
Because they also buy things.
Well, not only do they buy things, they also create a lot of startup companies.
Yeah.
But the problem is our fucking immigration policy
has a
visa quota. And so a lot of people get PhDs. They pay for higher education in this country, and then we send them right back to their country.
It's a reverse brain drain.
It's madness. Yeah. It's our bullshit immigration policy.
We want to keep these Indians here. We want to keep these smart Indians here.
You want to keep smart people here who come from other countries.
Especially Indians.
Why are you signaling out Indians? No, but you do. You want to signal out. You want to find these really smart people that come here and get their PhDs. You don't send them back after they fucking used our higher education. What are you out of your mind?
Unless they want to go back.
Yeah, of course. If they want to go back, they can always go back. But usually they want to stay here because it's really easy to.
Yeah, why have less smart people in your country? Yeah. Why have less smart people? I also do, besides being an actor, I've also do some personal training. And one of my clients is from India, and he came here and went to Wisconsin. And now his company is worth in cranes was estimated to be worth over $625 million.
Oh my God.
And he is.
It's so weird to have that much money.
Well, he is the nicest down to earth guy. He sure. does not live in an ostentatious manner at all. His children are spectacular. His daughter is a lawyer, giving back. I mean, you know, completely, you know, working pro bono for free to help poor people. I mean, these are the people it's, we want to attract and make this country
this
better.
That's what makes this fucking exactly. country great.
Of course. Thank you.
You know, that's what America is.
And he employs
is.
Me.
You're Irish. Mm-hmm. 1/8 of Ireland's population came through Ellis Island.
Correct.
Okay? 1/8 of Ireland's population. I'm Italian and Irish, which is why I have such beautiful dark eyes and I have such a
smoky.
Classic,
smoky.
Classic statuesque build.
You know, my mother's in love with your eyes.
I know. And I love your mother.
Thank you.
I wish it was a different time. She would have been my girl and you would have been my son. Oh.
Daddy.
Oh, dad, son. My Daddy. Son. I can't. Let's go play catch, son.
Daddy.
Yes, son.
Can we play catch?
Dad, son, you got to butch up because you sound really, really.
Daddy, can we. I don't know how to throw
son, the butch up.
Okay.
I want you to butch up. You cut that hair.
Daddy.
That was a little daddy son improv from Brian Callen and Jimmy Work. Wait, there was a point I wanted to make. Oh yeah. What would you you're a monk. I mean, you really live on very little money, you always have, and you've never really wanted for anything. You've figured out a way to be just live your life.
Health is wealth.
Yeah, well, you're also genuinely happy and mm-hmm. fulfilled for the most part. I mean,
I had a great girlfriend. and I did. She's a great girl.
But what would you do with?
She finally wised up.
If I gave you $600 million, or let me make it easy. If I gave you, I always say that wealth. You know, you're wealthy when you can live off the principal.
Right.
Where you don't have to touch. I mean, where you can live off the interest.
The interest of your
principal.
Where
you don't have to touch
right.
the principal. Where right. you can put the money in the bank and the interest, the income you make off that money. Is what you can live with. So if you have $10 million a year, if even in a conservative portfolio, you probably have $600,000 a year to spend. If you have 20 mil, now you got, you know, $1.2 million a year to spend before you even touch your principal. That's wealthy. You can live pretty damn well on $1.2 million a year. Believe it or not.
I think so. That's $100,000 a month.
There are a lot of people
so?
That spend that, by the way, a lot. But you know, with a
They're
big
pigs.
Mortgage and all
They're
that.
They're pigs.
Sure. But what would you do with that money if I gave you $20 million and it was in the bank and you had $100,000 a month to spend?
Oh, well, you know, that's why I always say playing lotto is one of the most entertaining things you can do. For $1, you can get a lotto ticket, and for the next few days, you can literally do what we talked about before, which was thought experiment. Mm. And for $1, you're allowed to actually dream because you have a shot, as infinitesimal as it might be.
A dollar and a dream.
Exactly, a dollar and a dream. And I always thought about this. If I ever hit lotto, or if somebody ever gave me a lot of money, or if I ever ended up with a lot of money, I would have a dinner party once a month with my friends, and underneath every seat would be a check for $50,000 or a check for $20,000 or something like that. Especially my friends who need money. Most of my friends need money, friends and family. And I would just,
I would give
the money away because I have a terrific apartment
way,
in New York.
A better way to do that, obviously.
Obviously.
You know, you could start a foundation or a charity.
Right.
There's that great saying that what the poor need is inspiration, not money. Mm-hmm. Not bread, but rather inspiration and idea.
Well, ask that. As somebody who doesn't have any money.
Well, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yo, man, no, I got a lot of inspiration. Yeah, I just don't have money.
Yeah, exactly. But I always just think about like the responsibility that would befall me if I had that kind of money because, you know, I would have to start some kind of foundation or some kind of charity. And I think that it would be somewhere in the area of I would go to the inner city and I would work with foster children.
Mm.
You know, 80% of the people on death row, I just heard the statistic. I think it's almost 80%. 80% of those that are on death row are foster care children.
Oh my!
And if you hear their stories,
wow.
if you hear their stories, yeah. they're almost always too much to bear. Ugh. You know, I have children, so the thought of
it's almost
child,
better that they just get executed.
Well,
just put them out of their misery.
That's what happens. It's so yeah. sick. You know, when you're 5 years old and your own mother tries to kill you because she's a paranoid schizophrenic. schizophrenic and then you're pushed into a foster care system where you're sexually abused your whole life and nobody cares about
Jesus.
You, you're going to become
a predator,
a broken human being either way.
Yeah.
And so that's what's so unbearable about things. And I would...
you know what, Brian? I live in America. Buck up.
Buck up,
Buck
Brian,
up.
Buck up.
Buck up.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say until you start to realize that, you know, these people are broken from a very early age. Now there are people on death row who are just fucking sociopaths and just...
Well, they say that...
Get off on...
They say that 25 to 30% of the people in prison are literally sociopaths.
I think it's even higher.
It might be higher than
that.
Yeah.
But I mean...
Again, brain malfunction. I mean, it's not like they're trying.
But then there are an awful lot of people who just went through horrific shit as children and lived in very violent circumstances, you know. And if they survive, well, you know, good luck. But blah, blah, blah. I the more I learn about this stuff, the more I would figure out a way to create. Like Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf started that school for underprivileged
Fantastic,
kids.
Yeah.
That's what I
You gave
do.
Me that book. I loved this book.
I would do that. I would go into urban areas and probably areas where the majority of people are of color, like black or Latina. I don't know. I mean, I don't fucking know. I don't know who they are. Everybody, whoever it is, you know, the planet white, black, Chinese, I don't give a fuck. But it's just like what kills me about this when you see these things is that you're wasting a human being. Mm. There's so much fucking potential out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just are
a
wasted.
A mind is
they're
a terrible thing
away
to waste.
Or they're warehoused, and it's something I think about. But I think I would do something. I don't know why I'm daydreaming and talking about this because I'm being very general, and it's probably getting very boring to people. Yeah. So let's move on.
Yeah, but it's food for thought, and it gives people something to think about. And that,
well,
how can you help?
Well, I think what's frustrating.
How can we progress?
What's frustrating is a lot of things you don't have a blueprint for how to help. You don't. You know, I mean, how do you help? Like, I should be helping. I should be fostering. A kid, but I'm fucking busy, man.
You're raising your own kids. How about that?
I'm raising my own.
You're
kids,
already doing
but
your
there is
job
room for one more, isn't there? I mean, I don't know, but like that's what I'm saying is that the truth is we're all fucking too busy to help anybody else.
Mm.
When you got your own family unit, you got your own life. I mean, that's really what that's kind of the truth.
Yeah.
Of the matter. At the end of the day, if shit hits the fan, you're kind of on your own. People will help you for 2 months, and then you're on your fucking own.
Yeah, well, that's what family is there for sometimes.
If
they'll do it. But friends, family, I mean, you are on your own.
You got to be self-reliant.
Yeah, but you also have I had tuberculosis.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We haven't talked about that.
Yeah, I had tuberculosis 5 years ago.
Give me the genealogy to that. Explain what happened and how it happened. You came down with tuberculosis.
Yeah. Consumption.
So which is like a fucking disease. Like, what do you mean, rickets? I mean, it's like a disease you read about in old literature.
Right.
Well, what, give me the, what happened? Tell us some stories about that.
Well, I thought certainly that tuberculosis was, you know, it one of those old diseases like beriberi and rickets, and it's, you know, it's nowhere. But I'm going to give you some numbers. The World Health Organization estimates one in three people in the world
have been exposed to it.
Have tuberculosis.
So carry it around with them, but it never shows up.
But it either lies dormant their whole lives, or in my case, I'm okay. I'm fine. It's not contagious unless you're close. But so that we're talking an estimated 2 billion people potentially. With tuberculosis.
I'm going to have to fact check that.
Please fact check it because you know that I went right to the computer when I found out I had it. And
So go on.
So I wasn't feeling very well, and I biked up to see my doctor.
You weren't feeling well in what sense?
Well, I wasn't. You know what? It was the only time in my life that I had walked into a restaurant. I ordered a complete meal, and they put it down in front of me, and I was like, I can't eat. I tried to take a bite out of it, and I went, I can't eat. I don't feel right. I don't feel good. And then I was sleeping, and this all happened in a week. And then I was sleeping, and I had this massive pain in my back. It was like someone was stabbing me, and I was waking up in the middle of the night. I was like, "What is that? Why? Oh my God!" And then I started to have bad dreams. I was dreaming that my father was poisoning me, and isn't that weird? And I finally went. I was like,
"Your dad was poisoning you."
And I was laid up on my couch. I thought maybe I have a flu or something. I was just laying on my couch, and I live by myself. So I was just like, wow, I don't feel right. And oh, it'll pass. It's the flu. And finally, it just didn't go anywhere. And I got on my bike and I biked the 70 blocks up to see my doctor. He took an x-ray and he said to me, your lungs are filled with fluid. That's why you're having a problem breathing. And that's why you have massive pain. He goes, I'm going to have to do an HIV test on you. I went, what?
Jesus.
Yeah, that scared me. I go, what? And he goes, yeah, because, you know, somebody young and healthy in their 40s like you are, you don't have walking pneumonia. And I think that's what you have. And I have to just test you for HIV because I think there might be something wrong with your, you know, immune system. I said, okay.
Fuck.
He literally took a blood test right there and he came out. And that was the longest 15 minutes of my life.
It took only 15 minutes.
Yeah, and he came right back out and he went, well, you're HIV negative, so it's not that. He said, I'm going to send you over.
Just like that. Oh, by the way, you're HIV negative.
Yeah, you're fine. Whew, okay. And he said, then he sent me a couple blocks over to a respiratory kind of therapist, a doctor, who looked at my stuff. And he said to me, I'm going to have to check you into the hospital. I go, what? And he goes, yeah, I need.
I remember because we had plans to go meet that, to eat, and you called me and said, hey, I got to go to the hospital.
Dude,
I was like, what?
You were hosting the comedy special.
Right.
You were
for Scotty Weingart.
Exactly.
Our friend, our dear friend Robbie's brother died in 9/11.
Yeah, and we would do charity events for him every year. And
raising money for children to go to college.
You should check that out. It's a beautiful, beautiful. It's Scott Weingart Memorial.
Scott Weingart Memorial. Yeah, it's a beautiful.
It's a beautiful, beautiful fun. We've helped autism. We've helped
a lot of lives.
Yeah, we've helped a lot.
But go
of
on,
things.
Go on. So.
So.
Oh yeah, that's right. So I got a call from you saying I got to go to the hospital.
I got to go to the hospital because I got to drain my lungs.
Jesus.
And you're like, oh, all right. Well, we got the comedy show tomorrow night and blah blah blah. I said no problem. I'm sure I'll be out after they drain my lungs. I'll be fine. Give me some antibiotics. Well, I went in and they drained my lungs. And then they said, listen, your lungs are filling up again. And so what they did was they inserted two tubes into my lung and left them there. And the tubes were about 4 feet long and they drained into what looked like a little briefcase.
I saw that. But did they do that right away?
They did that right away and they kept them there.
How did they? Because they put you under?
They put me under for that.
They
put
had
me under.
To.
Well, yeah. Well, they had to make incisions and
they
cut
drilled
into me.
Your fucking.
They drilled
in your chest and stuck tubes
two,
into your lungs.
Two tubes
into your lungs.
Into my lungs and
I
just
remember
literally
you walking around with like suitcase.
Yeah.
Full of fluid.
Full of fluid.
Oh
it looked like
God.
It looked
it was like bloody. It was
brown
black, fluid. Brown dude.
Coffee. Bad,
color.
Nasty.
It was just
bile.
Coffee.
Bile. It was bad
it was like
bile.
Weak coffee.
Yeah, it was bad bile.
With no milk in it.
So after a couple of days, they said,
coffee,
listen, this isn't pneumonia. We're checking you for tuberculosis, but you don't seem to be coming back positive for that. You're not coughing, which is a sign of tuberculosis. And your expectorant, which was when you spit, you spit up and they would tell you. Testing that. And that wasn't coming up positive for tuberculosis. So we're not really sure what you have. They moved me into a private room to quarantine me. And people had to come in with face masks. And then basically what happened was I spent a month in the hospital with them trying to figure out what it was. Was it sarcoidosis? Which
what
was
that?
Sarcoidosis is a
it's
fatal.
What the firemen
have. Yeah, all the firemen, all the ground zero workers who were down there. They were inhaling all this stuff, and basically your lungs turn to get brittle, turn to sand. They
really?
Get brittle and turn to sand, yeah. Oh, no, you die from sarcoidosis. Bernie Mac had it. That's how he died, sarcoidosis.
That's right.
Yeah, it's fatal. So they said, you might have
that's
sarcoidosis,
so
you might have cancer, we're not really sure.
Yeah, I remember they told you might have lung cancer or lymphoma.
Yep, and so I said, well, you know what,
So they basically said to you, you either have a fatal cancer or you have a fatal lung disease.
Right.
That's what they told
or
me.
It's tuberculosis, but the tests aren't coming up. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to go in, take a piece of your lung out, biopsy it, test it, use it and culture it. Use it for cultures to see if it grows. And then while we're in there, we're also going to kind of clean out your lung while we're in there. So I said, okay.
Oh, that's just a minor operation.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And
they do it. It's just so casual. It's
it's
a bunch of guys going, hey, yeah, you know, we're going to.
And my doctor was, you want to talk about it? He was, what's that country next to Italy, across for the.
Albanian.
Albanian. He was Albanian and a very bright guy.
They're a tough group.
Very big, tough, swarthy guy, and he was the head thoracic surgeon at the hospital, and so super fucking confident. You know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We're going to handle it. Don't worry about it. We're going to handle it. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. I don't, you know. And you know what? I have to tell you, I like that confidence in a doctor.
I do too.
I like confidence.
You want
like
a doctor? You don't want a doctor going, well,
yeah,
we're going to hold you alone.
Sure.
I don't know. I've never done it before.
First time.
But I think it's going to be fine now.
I had great doctors, and I was at a fantastic hospital. He went in, they biopsied my lung, and. They said it's not cancer and it's not sarcoidosis, and
that's good news.
No, great fucking news. And then he literally skipped into my room a day later and said, or a couple days later, and he said, "We cultured it. Your lung, you do have tuberculosis."
And he was excited about it.
He was excited because it's curable.
It's curable.
It's 9 months of antibiotics every single day.
9 months of antibiotics every day.
And
how was your stomach? And you lost, you became colorblind, right?
Yeah, I became colorblind through the, yeah, that's exactly right.
The antibiotics make you colorblind.
Yeah, I wanted to write a one-man play called Why My Tears Are Red, because...
We called you Jimmy Burkulosis.
Yeah, oh, I know.
Because your name is Jimmy Burke, and we called you Jimmy Burkulosis. But like, you went colorblind.
I'm colorblind from the medication.
Also, I remember when they cut into your back, you couldn't breathe in. For about a year.
A year. And I have permanent nerve damage now.
You still do?
Oh, absolutely.
In other words, are you numb in your back?
I'm numb. And every time I take a really big, deep breath when I'm like playing tennis or something, or I can feel it. It feels like there's a strap around my rib cage. Always.
Dude.
Always. Yeah.
That's no joke.
But I have to be honest with you, it's better than having tuberculosis.
You get used to it, don't you?
Yeah, and I learned something too. First of all, the Board of Health here does not kid around with infectious diseases. They sent people to my apartment. I was quarantined in my apartment for 2 weeks. All I did was eat ice cream and watch porno on my computer. And you know that before that, I never used to watch porno on my computer. I used it just for Google and email and whatever. And I just started watching. I became addicted to porn for like 2 weeks.
Mm. Thank God for porn, dude.
Yeah, and I mean, I literally would wake up and I would go right
to ice cream and jerk off.
Yeah, and
that's good for tuberculosis. Well, that's good when you're convalescing.
Exactly. Well, I had lost 25 pounds. I went from 165 to 140.
That's right. You were so fucking.
I was
skinny.
Really thin.
But you handled that with such grace. I remember how I never heard you complain or even stop smiling. It was pretty wild. And you basically had to go to the Board of Health every day.
Every single day.
Antibiotics.
That
was
an
educated. It wasn't like they gave you pills. You had to go there every
yeah.
day.
Yeah. Well, by going there, they saw that you take the pills.
Ah.
So they have to visually watch you take the pills.
Because you don't want an antibiotic-resistant form of TB. That would be a problem.
Yeah. Well, and mine, the reason why...
So much of the, by the way, the reason a lot of these diseases... Diseases like gonorrhea and all these diseases are developing resistant strains to antibiotics
right.
is because people in other countries can buy antibiotics over the counter and they don't take them properly.
Right. Or they don't, they'll take them for 4 days.
Yeah, and then
start
it clears
to lose
up,
the symptoms.
And what happens
yeah,
is
and
the fucking,
exactly.
the virus mutates and becomes antibiotic
yeah.
resistant.
Stronger. And
that's
yeah.
why doctors always say take all the antibiotics.
All of it. If it says a week or 10 days, take it
take
a week or 10
a
days.
Week or 10
you
got
to take it the whole time.
You got to bang out the infection. Maybe it'll help this drip I keep.
Yeah,
doing.
You should get that fixed.
Nah, I'm not going to. I like having
fixed.
A yellow drip.
Get antibiotics.
Shut up. I'm not a pussy. I'll just fucking... I'll punch that virus in the face.
Wow.
Or in my
How do you punch a virus in the face?
In the dick.
Oh.
So you had tuberculosis. That is no joke, man. Mm-hmm. You're an atheist. You're a militant
yeah.
atheist.
I'm a humanist. I don't believe in God. I don't believe God created the universe and God created man and the world.
Right.
No, I don't
Certainly
believe
not
in that.
A Judeo-Christian version of it, at least.
Yeah, no.
But you were going to die. I mean, there was a chance you were going to fucking die, and you were pretty okay with that.
Yeah, well, I had 17 years of Catholic school education, and I was really seriously only hit on once by a brother.
and by brother, you don't mean black guy, you mean
no,
priest.
No, I mean a little Italian brother who I ran into years later, and I wanted to punch him right in the face. Mm. I was 16 to 15 or 16 at the time. So I knew right from wrong. I mean, I wasn't intimidated by him, and I just told him to stop. But I know that he abused other kids. I know it. He tried to do it to my friend.
But that's not what turned you off from religion.
Oh, no, not at all. The whole indoctrination of religion and stuff. But at the time, I knew Catholic schools were great schools. I stayed in them because the education is great. I went to Catholic university.
But
when I was 15, I told my dad. My dad said, let's go. It was Christmas Day. We're going to church. I said, Dad, I'm not going to church. We only go to church on we're A&P Catholics, basically. You know, Ash Wednesday and Palm Sunday, only when he gets something.
Well,
and
he fucking
got it. I said, I'm not going. He goes, get up. It's great. You know, it's Christmas. You got to go to church. I go, Dad, I don't believe in God. I'm not going to church. It's bullshit. I'm not going. And I was 15. And boy, that pissed him off. And it fucked him up a little bit. And he left. And I never went to church again. So I knew at an early age that it's all bullshit and it's all indoctrination. So I've been living my life knowing that you only have one life to live. And you got to make the very, very most of it.
Where is faith or belief, or do you have any space for that?
Well, of course, I believe in human beings. I believe in the best in human beings, but I'm also realistic to know that human beings can be very, very fucked up, nasty,
good
vicious,
and bad.
Good and bad, exactly. But I try to surround myself with good people, try to do good things, I try to do good things for my body.
We were talking
I'm a humanist. I believe in humanity.
Well, we were talking about how
I believe in nature.
Humanity seems to be being nudged in a certain direction, and that direction, I would argue, is toward each other.
We're the most social animal in the world. Though.
Yeah, but it seems to be, we are, technology is nudging us inexorably, you know, and beyond our control, toward a certain direction, and I do think it is bringing us together. Toward each other is that direction. What I mean by that is, if we can start to have virtual experiences as each other, where I can tap into your experience, your brain, the way you can, with a computer, which is, you know, other people's experiences and stuff like that.
Well, we both love Ray Kurzweil's book called
The Singularity.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
it's just interesting.
It's well
just,
worth
it
reading.
It really raises these. It seems like technology is not only changing how we live and how we speak to each other and all, but it's also, I think, changing our view of what religion and spirituality has traditionally been. I think it's revolutionizing the notion of everything that we have built this society on. I think. I don't know. I mean, people are much smarter than I am talking about this. That's for sure. But it just seems like with the advent of technology and the exponential growth in technology, it's a little bit like, I always think about the Native Americans whose entire mythology was wrapped around their environment.
Yeah.
And with, you know, many tribes with the buffalo being at the apex of their mythology, and just read Joseph Campbell about this, but you know, the buffalo and then from there all the other animals and that ecosystem that their mythology, their religion was so inseparably entwined with. But what happened was, as their environment became decimated, as the buffalo were all killed, as they were dying from western diseases like smallpox, tuberculosis, influenza,
all the blankets they got,
they just didn't have. Even the missionaries were trying to convert them, and even the westerners that were trying to help them, in fact, they even as far back as in 1700s, when the British didn't think it was a good idea for the new settlers to expand westward because it was going to create a lot of problems with the Native Americans, they were dying from just being around them because they had never been exposed to the European diseases that, you know, Europeans had dealt with for many, many years. And so I always think about the fact that for Native Americans, their religion was essentially gone. It disappeared in front of their eyes. What they hinged on was gone, was decimated. And so now they were left with nothing but, you know, their imagination. There was no buffalo to even look at. I wonder what that must have been like. And I think that technology for human beings, it seems, for, I'm sorry, Westerners and just all of us now in this world, technology is going to raise questions that might very well seriously question all these faiths that we've been having wars with and everything else. I mean, And even the idea of love, I mean, if we can break down what love is chemically and induce you with a chemical or a series of chemicals that bring about the feeling of intense love for a rabbit,
absolutely.
Then what does it say about everything we've written songs and poems about? Love is a great mystery. But it's not going to be a great mystery maybe in 20 years when we can figure out exactly what's going on chemically with
exactly.
you and actually manipulate your brain.
Yep.
So it really is hard then to start believing in what I like to believe in, which is the mystery of things. I'm a romantic. So I know we'll figure that out, but I don't know if I want that to come along. I really enjoy the mystery and romance of life and that being things I really can't.
You're a hopeful romantic.
I am a hopeful romantic.
Not a hopeless, but
I always think of the Native American example when I I say that.
Well, so. Bubba, that's where we're going, and I don't mind the mystery being unraveled.
That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the point.
Yeah. I read a fantastic magazine called American Scientific Mind. I highly recommend it.
I gotta read that.
My ex-girlfriend got me a subscription to it 4 years ago. We had to buy it from her little niece who was selling it for, you know, Girl Scouts or something. I don't know. Anyway, and I tell you, it's a wonderful, and it just, and I think I told you this before, Brian, but there, Charlie Rose had on Crick and Watson, who discovered the
DNA.
I forget which one it was. I think it maybe was James Crick. Very old.
Both
now,
of whom are still alive, or
one? Just one.
One.
I think Crick. And he, I could be wrong. It might be Watson.
The sequencing, deciphering, I guess, of DNA, by the way, one of the great scientific discoveries. And now recently the human genome.
Right, you know, exactly. So,
those were seminal moments in our history.
Yeah. And
changed everything.
Absolutely. And I think it happened back in 1950-something, 50-something.
55, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. And what Crick was talking about on Charlie Rose, and he was in his late 80s, and still very sharp as a tack, and he was on there, and he was talking about a book that he had written on Darwin. And it was funny how, you know, Darwin was really, if you think about it, one of the most influential human beings in history, because Darwin...
He's in the top 10
of
the past 1,000 years.
Absolutely.
Shakespeare, Einstein, Newton, Gutenberg, yep. Galileo, Copernicus. You got to put Darwin in there.
You have to put him there. He also, basically, with his theory of evolution, basically took God out of the equation.
He said there is a design without a designer.
Right.
But, of course, the romantics came back at him, like William James and those guys who said, well, that may be true, but, you know, there is a mystery to life. It's like, you know,
plenty
like
of mystery. Taking a violin and smashing
it in a bunch of pieces and saying that's a violin and saying actually a violin's a box with strings that if it's touched properly by an artist, it makes music, you know. Mm-hmm. Human beings can be the same way. You can break them down into cells and protozoa and smart monkeys, but then you can also look at human beings as these fantastic, wonderful instruments with infinite potential.
That's exactly how you asked me what my belief system is. Mm. There it is right there.
Do you see that? You see, ladies and gentlemen, how I just
put
this whole amazing podcast that way? Jim, I try to keep this at 1 hour, and we are almost at an hour and 1 minute.
Bubba, I had a great time. Thank you.
I'm going to have you back.
I love you.
Because you are my favorite person in many ways on the planet. You're my best friend, and you're a brilliant guy.
Baby.
And very unique. You're very... You are a treasure because you're a very unique dude who's always lived your life the way you want it, and you've always done what you want, when, how, without hurting other people. So, Jim Burke, thank you for being you, and thanks for listening. Once again, I will be at the Parlor Live in Seattle, July 12th to the 14th, and then I'll be at the Addison Improv in Dallas, July 26th, 27th, 28th. Come and get some.
He's awesome live if you've never seen him.